No criminal charges against Curtis Hill, a new pair of polls in the U.S. Senate race, that plus a recommendation for sports gambling, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 26th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, a special prosecutor announced his decision not to file criminal charges against Republican Attorney General Curtis Hill over sexual misconduct allegations. Four women, a state lawmaker, and three legislative staffers say Attorney General Curtis Hill groped them at a party in March. The Inspector General's investigation into those allegations describes Hill's behavior as, quote, inappropriate, creepy, and unwelcome. Hill denies touching anyone inappropriately. Special Prosecutor Dan Sigler says he wouldn't be able to prove Hill committed a crime. Hill's attorneys say he's exonerated and absolved. The four women are taking initial steps to bring a civil case against Hill for harassment, discrimination, and retaliation. Legislative leaders and the governor all reiterated their calls for Hill to resign. What, if anything, happens now with Curtis Hill? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, Leslie Weidenbender, managing editor of the Indianapolis Business Journal, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, will Curtis Hill remain Attorney General through the remainder of his current term?
He certainly intends to. It seems like based on his response right after the report came out, if you've been a staunch defender of Curtis Hill, and you read that report and think that's exoneration, that he's been exonerated now and this is all clean and we can put this all behind us, I don't know what report you read, but it wasn't the same one I read. It was a pretty damning report. In terms of the integrity that we expect from certainly our statewide elected officials and especially the state's leading law enforcement officer. The threshold question, I mean, this is going to continue because of this civil case that's now moving forward. I think if we look back at how Curtis Hill handled this, right out of the gate when it became public, he said, well, this is unfair. It's the first time hearing about this. Now in the report we look back and now we know that the Attorney General's office was well aware of this within 24 hours or 48 hours of the actual incidents occurring. So there's that issue. If you're a politician, you can't, I mean, there's no way he spent 3 months not thinking about this. There's no way they spent 3 months not, the small group of people he has around him trying to figure out how to handle this if and when it ever became public. How he goes forward here and executes the duties of that office is hard to, in a airtight, credible way that you would expect from an attorney general is really hard to understand. It's hard to understand what Indiana's place now is in national lawsuits where attorneys general have to collaborate in these huge lawsuits. How you would have to go defend the General Assembly in an action or the governor in something the administration does. It's hard to understand how this goes forward in a way that is credible and respectful.
Does Curtis Hill remain Attorney General through the rest of his term?
Well, that's up to the Republican Party. I mean, it's obvious Curtis Hill isn't going to resign, as the governor and the speaker and the president pro tem at the time all called upon him to do.
And have said again.
And have reiterated that again. So there is an impeachment process, and there will be a bill of impeachment introduced. So then the question is, what do the Republican Party stalwarts do about this? I mean, when you can't protect a woman, an elected woman legislator, and staff members of the General Assembly from an assault by the highest-ranking legal officer of the state of Indiana, what does that say about the legislature? They ought to be able to do something about this, which is it's a scandal, is what it is, that these women were subjected to this and that this is the highest law enforcement officer in the state of Indiana. So the legislature can come in and they can throw him out. And that's what they ought to do.
Lori Torres, the Inspector General, Dan Sigler, the Special Prosecutor, some of the statements from legislative leaders say this is in the hands of the public now. Is that where it is?
It is. I mean, honestly, it's up to every Hoosier to sit down and decide. I mean, whether it was a crime, that's all over. It was not a crime, okay? At least one that they thought
he could prosecute.
Yeah. The question is, do you think it's appropriate for a statewide elected official to get drunk in public, touch up to seven women in a way that made them all uncomfortable, dirty dance with a lobbyist in public. I mean, these, you know, these are things that they have to decide whether that's appropriate behavior for an elected official. And if they think not, they need to let Brian Bosma know, and they need to let Rod Bray know, because they have the power to remove him, even if they don't want to talk about that.
Will they?
Well, it doesn't look like it right now. I mean, frankly, yes, the governor has called for his resignation. Yes, legislative leaders have called for his resignation. Nobody's out there beating the drum for it. They are not really out there trying to get him to resign. They have publicly said he should. But they are not doing the things that would marginalize him in a way to lead him to think that's really his only option. They have left him the total ability to stay in office if that's what he wants. And maybe they don't want to go out there that far. But I think it's not fair to say that they're out there pushing for his resignation when they really have done the bare minimum to call for it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of bandwidth right now for that. Is a big effort, and it requires coordination and everybody kind of being all in at a time when we're 8 or 10 days away from an election. All these and a lot of this attention's elsewhere. I think if we could look 2 weeks from now, and the focus does shift. It's easy for us to go, you ought to be doing this right now. When you've got 100 members of the General Assembly all running for re-election, there's a lot of races in the state, more than we've ever seen before. I mean, there's a lot of attention that's kind of scattered right now. It refocuses pretty quick.
Do you think it will
in the next 2 weeks?
I don't know.
Honestly, I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that. But there's got to be a willingness for everybody to put it on the line.
Let me ask this, though. If the General Assembly doesn't act, Curtis Hill seems to want to remain in office, do you think he loses at either the convention or at the ballot box in 2020?
Oh, I would hope so. I mean, it is revolting. And what does it say about sexual harassment? I mean, the Republican Party, which has supermajorities in both houses, has the ability to oust someone who seven people say was out of line on a particular night. And if they don't do something about that, it says that when you're an elected official, you get special treatment, which, by the way, he did in this investigation. I have never seen a case where a defendant before could issue a videotaped statement and then funnel questions through his attorney.
Although,
like that.
At the same time, to that end, the options seem to have been either he issues, you know, they do the video statement, or he just doesn't talk to them.
That's right. And he obviously has a right to plead the Fifth Amendment and not talk to them. He has that right. Okay.
But that would have been a hard thing to sell when you've been complaining about not being talked to,
that's true.
Never
that's
getting
true.
My side.
But and getting special attention in that, too, without having to go one-on-one with the prosecutor in the Q&A, gives him preferential treatment, which is part of the gripe of this whole thing.
I actually think he didn't get preferential treatment because I think he got treated like everybody else. A prosecutor decided that this low-level misdemeanor wasn't worth the time or money. I think that's the way most defendants get treated. Most cases go through a process like that that has to do with finances and has to do with time. I actually think it would have been more interesting if the prosecutor would have decided in this case where this guy is the top law enforcement officer or the top legal officer in the state, that we should actually take a different look at him. I think that would have been interesting.
And a videotape deposition is a special treatment. That just doesn't happen to the average potential defendant. Sorry, doesn't.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will Attorney General Curtis Hill serve out the rest of his term in office? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, will Pacers star Victor Oladipo's endorsement of Joe Donnelly make an impact in the Senate race? 38% say yes, 62% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, two new insights this week into Indiana's critical U.S. Senate race with the release of a pair of public polls on the campaign between Joe Donnelly, Mike Braun, and Lucy Brenton. Both polls agree on this. The Senate race is tight within the margin of error between Donnelly and Braun. A poll from the Mike Down Center for Indiana Politics shows Donnelly ahead by one. A survey from IndyPolitics.org has Braun up 4 points. Two areas where the poll significantly diverged, undecideds and support for Libertarian Lucy Brenton. 11% of people in the Downs poll say they're not sure who they'll vote for, compared to just 7% in the IndyPolitics survey. And while 8% of respondents in Downs say they'll back Brenton, the Libertarian support is just 3% in the other poll. And Delaney, what's the biggest takeaway for you here?
Well, the biggest takeaway is no big surprise. This is a neck-and-neck race. Everybody's vote counts in this race, and nobody should delude themselves into thinking that they can't make a difference, because they will. It's a very tight race, and it is absolutely neck-and-neck. Nobody is really ahead in this. I mean, you can argue, of course, the Republicans undersampled Libertarians. Democrats may have oversampled them. There are variations in this. But as we saw in 2016, the entire election can swing in the last 10 days, which is where we are now. So it's very, very important. If you want a senator who's independent-minded and votes for Hoosiers, you go with Joe Donnelly. If you want a rubber stamp, you go with Mike Braun. Pretty simple.
Snuck it in there at the end.
Yeah.
True.
Pretty much the same takeaway, that this is a margin of error race through Election Day?
It feels a lot like 2016 in that I ran Governor Holcomb's campaign, and we couldn't get John Gregg, however we dialed it up, past kind of the mid-40s. And that's really where Donnelly's been forever. He's been at 41, 43. I mean, there was this one poll that had him at 54, which I think everybody tossed, because it's just there was a couple of those in 16 that were, like, way out.
Yeah.
And they were just kind of hit-and-run polls. But it feels a lot like that. I think Braun is moving. I think there's been a sense on the Republican side that he's started to create a little daylight between he and Donnelly, and he's moving in the right direction. Donnelly must be feeling that, because now he's got three ads running right now where he is running as a Republican, straight up. I mean, he's talking about Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump in all those ads. And any self-respecting Democrat's got to look at that and go, what is happening?
What about the used car ad that Braun has on with the little
thing? How about the one where Joe Donnelly's got a salad getting thrown in his head?
So I think one of the most interesting polls of the week is actually the one that Ball State, the information Ball State put out.
It just came out, yeah.
Where they, yeah, and they said that most people don't even have an opinion about either one of our U.S. senators. Or not most people, but a huge chunk of people don't have an opinion about them at all, which I think is fascinating given that we had a big race 2 years ago involving Todd Young, and now we've got this huge race. It's interesting that so many people don't have an opinion either way. To me, that was the most interesting poll of the week.
I feel like you've got to work hard not to have an opinion on either Joe Donnelly
or Todd Young. We don't do much in the way of civic education in this state. We really don't.
Or maybe people don't know what to think,
given
everything that's been said about both of them.
Mm. I think it's clear that we are starting to see the undecideds break a little, and I think they are breaking toward Braun. I think, to Leslie's point, I think Hoosiers are just fatigued, and I think you either really, really care about the race or you don't care at all. Like, there's not a lot of middle ground, average casual voter stuff. It's either you're following every tiny little bit or you are just not in tune at all.
You're hitting the mute on the TV.
Well, I'm definitely in that camp. Legislative Study Committee recently voted to recommend with caution that lawmakers consider legalizing sports gambling in Indiana.
A handful of states have passed similar legislation since the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in May to strike down a federal law that effectively made sports betting illegal. Committee Chair Republican Representative Ben Smaltz says the study committee still doesn't understand the complexities around the issue enough to make an explicit recommendation, but he wants the conversation to continue. The recommendation, which passed unanimously, is essentially neutral. It asks members of the General Assembly to consider a bill in the next legislative session, but doesn't weigh in on how they should vote. Proponents of legalized sports gambling argue that money currently spent on the black market, often run by foreign companies, should generate money instead for the state. A consultant group hired by the state estimates regulated sports betting would generate $87 million for Indiana in the first 5 years.
Nikki Kelly, is it a matter of how and when, not if, Indiana legalizes sports gambling?
I think so. I think virtually every lawmaker I talk to is along the same line of, well, people are already doing it. It's time for us to get our cut. We can say we're regulating, cleaning it up, making it a fair thing. And also, we just need to face it. Indiana is way past this. We have wholeheartedly embraced all kinds of gambling in Indiana, and this is one other form. I think the more interesting part of the whole debate will be watching how casinos propel the debate in a way that helps aid them and the use of the mobile betting and some of the finer points of the debate.
Yeah. Is that going to be the sticking point here, that it's probably not going to derail it, but
it's always about the money. It's always about who ends up making the money off of this. Sports gambling is different, though, than casino gambling. You don't always, the operators of sports betting don't always make a lot of money off of it. And so it would be interesting to see if there are folks who really want to get into it where this is all they would do. But I actually think sports betting is very different than other kinds of gambling, personally. And I understand why there might be some hesitation. In the end, though, a lot of other states are going to get into it, so there's no way Indiana will sit this one out.
Yeah, is that the most compelling argument that will propel this discussion forward is, well, everybody else is doing it?
Maybe, but we're a little unique. I think the NCAA's presence here is makes us a little bit unique. They've had to really come off of their hardline position recently, and we saw them do that last week in the legislative hearing. I think that there's a lot of details to figure out here. Just who can do it, where can they do it, how can they do it. And it also plays off the other gaming issues that we're going to see this session. Terre Haute made a big push to move one of those licenses out of Northwest Indiana and down to Terre Haute. Those kind of issues always – it could all be part of the same package. Yeah, and they play kind of play off each other.
It's always all packaged together in the end. There's almost never a gambling issue that's all by itself.
To that end then, if we're talking about moving a casino license, that's – boy, talk about hot button at the State House. But does that actually threaten the sort of fait accompli of
this thing is going to consume all the oxygen in the legislative session. And we've got serious problems in the state, and this is going to be a lobbyist full employment bill. And I hope that we can get through it without anybody being indicted or anything else on this. But I just wish we would focus as much time and attention on issues that are really important. I put this in the, okay, does it raise some additional revenue? Yes. But is it what makes or breaks the state?
We don't have to pick one thing. I mean, people dismiss these kind of high-profile issues that maybe don't matter to the life and death of children. You know, like, oh, my God, we're doing gaming, but we're not doing these other things. We can do it all. It just so happens
but
that sports gaming is cool and popular, and people want to do it.
We don't do it all. We don't do it all with the same level of attention.
Sure we
no, we
well,
don't.
Well, no, but that's right. The same level of attention is absolutely right.
That's right.
The fact that there's going to be 1,000 bills filed and we're moving a lot of issues are going to move through this legislation is also true.
Well, Indiana's high-profile political races are attracting some big-name boosters, including the most recent this week in Donald Trump Jr.
The president's son rallied with several GOP candidates in Greenfield, Indiana. That includes Senate candidate Mike Braun and 6th Congressional District hopeful Greg Pence. Trump implored the crowd to help get people to vote.
They don't want someone coming from the outside, like Mike Braun, like Greg Pence, and showing Americans you don't need to be career politicians to get it done. In fact, you'll do a lot better if you're not.
Meanwhile, U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders recently stopped in Bloomington as part of a multi-state tour to stump for 9th District Democratic candidate Liz Watson. He addressed a number of issues, including health care and wages, and Sanders pledged to work with Watson to raise the minimum wage to $15 and close the gender wage gap.
Lizzie Weidenbender, I actually want to focus a little more on Bernie Sanders in two ways, but I'll start with this. Does his presence help Liz Watson in the 9th?
Well, it certainly helps Liz Watson in Bloomington. And that's where a lot of Democrats are. And so it's really important if she has any chance that she motivate a lot of votes out of that area. So it certainly helps in that regard.
But did they really need much more motivation in this particular year?
I think it's always a good idea to motivate voters to come out. I really do. Especially in races where Democrats aren't sure that they can win. So I think I think that is important. But does it help in some of the more rural parts of the district? Probably not that much.
Yeah, it's not even maybe the rural parts that if you're Liz Watson you're worried about. It's Bernie Sanders is a polarizing figure, even in the Democratic Party in some cases. Is he actually, yes, he's definitely helping in Bloomington. But is that more than offset by how he might actually hurt you in even, like, down by the river where she's going to pick up some votes?
I don't think so. I think anything, I mean, she's looking for some earned media, mm-hmm. and she got that having a national figure come in, even if you're polarized on him. Yeah. And, you know, she's trying to hit Trey Hollingsworth on, you know, buying the election and being from out of state. And so she needs to get her fundraising up and her name ID up. And this was a way to help. And I don't think it's going to at all sort of define her race.
I want to ask now about Joe Donnelly and Bernie Sanders. Obviously, they were not linked with these rallies at all. As far as I'm aware, Bernie Sanders did not mention the name Joe Donnelly. Is Joe Donnelly very happy that Bernie Sanders didn't mention his name?
Come on. He came for Liz Watson in a race that's closer than Trey Hollingsworth had hoped it would be. So he's doing what he's supposed to do and focusing on the candidate he's there to help. I love having Donald Trump the third or fourth or fifth or whatever he is come there.
I think it's
for the
just
two
junior.
Of them
I think it's
saying
just junior.
Outsiders, businessmen. You got one business guy who exploits his workers. That's Mike Braun. And then you have another one who went bankrupt and stuck other people with the bill, just like Donald Trump Jr.'s old man did. So there's kind of like a trifecta there. They're all alike. And
Indiana
that's
voted,
what they
Indiana
had.
Voted for Donald Trump, though.
They did. They did. For a guy who went bankrupt, was it four or five times? I forget. I lost count on how many times he stiffed people with the bills that he took his own money out of first. So, yeah, I don't think that's the kind of legislation that we want to see in the future and the kind of people voting on that legislation that are so much like Donald Trump.
At this late stage in the race, when we talked about in the Senate race, for instance, it's a razor-thin margin. These kind of high-profile appearances helping gin up that enthusiasm that everybody's looking for?
Well, they found the one piece of real estate in the entire state where Bernie Sanders is popular, and it's Dunn Meadow in Bloomington, Indiana, on the IU campus.
Very popular there.
Very, very popular right off of Kirkwood. I totally agree with that. If the Donnelly campaign didn't pick up the phone and call Bernie Sanders and say, do not mention our name, they're crazy. That had to have happened because this is not a popular thing outside of this very niche market. But we don't just report it in very niche markets. It gets reported all over the state. And so it's very good for Trey Hollingsworth and all over the 9th District for this to be a referendum between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. That's fantastic.
It's
with
0%
of the precincts reporting, I'd like to congratulate Trey Hollingsworth on his reelection.
It's also good if it turns out more Democratic votes in Monroe County because they'll also vote for Joe Donnelly.
That's true. Well, we assume they'll vote for Joe Donnelly.
I'm sure they're all thrilled with his embrace of
Donnelly. They are not going to vote for Mike Braun.
No, but they are members of the radical left that Joe
Donnelly hates.
So am I under his definition.
That's true.
If I don't like Donald Trump, I must be a member of the radical left.
Well, Republican Congressman Jim Banks recently launched a fundraising site to give fellow Republicans running across the country a boost.
The site, through the National GOP's online fundraising platform, is dubbed Stop Speaker Pelosi. Banks' message is that, in his words, Republican candidates everywhere are getting crushed. Money given through the platform is funneled to 23 House races across the country that could help decide which party controls the U.S. House the next 2 years. Banks, whose Democratic opponent actually outraised him last quarter, is considered secure in his re-election bid.
Mike O'Brien, is this part of an effort by Jim Banks to boost his profile within the national party?
That wasn't the point, but I think it'll have that effect. I mean, Congressman Banks got some credit for this, but basically House Republican leadership in Congress went to members that were in safe districts, and Banks is in one of those safe districts now. I mean, there was a spirited fight for that, but it's off the table now. And they asked those guys in safe districts to go and try to raise these small dollars to go distribute to other parts of the country in some of these battleground races late. And Banks did a great job doing that. And that is how you kind of rise through leadership and get leadership's attention.
Todd Rokita actually was sort of occupying that sort of role, and obviously in a safe district in the 4th when he was running there, where he was generating a lot of money for other people because he didn't necessarily need a ton of it for himself. Is Jim Banks sort of slipping into that role?
Following in Todd Rokita's
Why would you
footsteps?
Set her up like that?
I'm just asking.
It's an obvious, but I mean, it's...
It did him an awful lot of good, didn't it?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Just elevate Jim Banks a little bit?
Probably a little. And it's a good way to look at it. The Democrats have been doing it for years, so I'm glad they finally did it. But to focus instead on the overall goal of retaining the majority versus individual races, I think is a good way to try to get people involved.
In a broader way, is Jim Banks maybe the next rising star on the national stage out of Indiana?
It's too early. I think it's way too early to know that for sure. Having said that, this is the way you do it. I mean, you raise money for other people. You get other members to have a reason to be grateful that you're there.
You got to do more than 63,000 to get to that category.
Yeah, but you did that pretty fast. Yeah. So.
Okay,
just
but
a couple
we're only
days.
10 days away from the election. Mm-hmm.
Well,
$65,000 just a drop in the bucket for Ann.
No, but it is.
Big time people
like
you Democrats.
Mike Braun and Trey Hollingsworth,
man.
However.
Finally, An Australian billionaire says plans are forging ahead to build a replica of the Titanic and sail it by 2022 along its namesake's ill-fated path. And Elena, you buying a ticket?
Only if Donald Trump is still in office.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump is in office. She's buying a ticket
on
Titanic, too.
I'm buying a ticket because, you know, we're all going down.
What does it take for Mike O'Brien to buy a ticket on the Titanic 2?
Well, I wasn't around for the first one, so...
Careful.
Yeah, I'm not tempting fate, so I'd do it.
You'd do it?
Yeah, of course. Like
the lightning striking twice.
What are the odds? Yeah. What are the odds of that?
It depends on the time of year you go on it, too, I think.
What does it take for you? No way?
No, I'm not doing it, no.
Oh, I'd be there.
As long as I'm on the upper deck. I'm not going down and steer. They're doing that steerage thing again where they lock everybody in the hull of the thing. I'm not doing that.
All right. That's the threshold. All right. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, Leslie Weidenbender of Indianapolis Business Journal, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.